Michigan HockeyCast 2.4. Hey, hockey doesn't have the worst offense on campus anymore. So due to the long stretch of Vegas Golden Knights home games, Anthony has decided to move to Vegas for a few months. So it looks like for the next HockeyCast today, or whenever you're listening to this, I've brought in my colleague that I've been working for about 5 years. He was on a couple episodes ago, Adam Peppermint Schnepp. Peppermint, how you doing, buddy?
I'm great. Thanks for using that nickname. How are you?
I'm doing well as well. As are... the Michigan Wolverines hockey team.
Good segue.
Yeah. Right? They were doing very not well for a long time, so it's not like they're in great position now, but compared to where they were a few weeks ago, this is, I think, a ton of found gold.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
So the first thing, the last time we talked, we mentioned, we wrapped up the first half of the season, but it was before the GLI, so we can touch on that really quickly. No one was allowed to watch this because I don't think anyone paid $29.95 for Flow.com TV or whatever it is. I was out of town and I was going to watch it, and then I realized, I think Brian would yell at me if I sent him an expense for that. Although, I don't know if he even checks my expenses anymore, so... or if he listens to this. Brian, if you're listening, you should check my... Oh, no, never mind. Anyway. Okay, so... First, Michigan played Ferris State, and again, I didn't see the game, but I looked at a lot of the numbers. You followed it a little bit online.
Yeah.
And Michigan, I think, ran them out of the building, based on what I could tell. And I think they had a decent lead. Bailey sent over the shot charts. She was at the game, and I was looking at them, and it did not take me long to fill out much of the Ferris State shot attempts. Michigan crushed them in Corsi, I think, 62-30. Michigan also got a power play goal and shut Ferris State out.
That's what I was going to highlight.
Penalty kill. Yeah. Yep. Which I guess kind of is what you'd expect or hope if they play a team that is not as good, and Ferris is down in pairwise this year. Anything that you want to add about the Ferris State game that I did not get to?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, you didn't see it. Oh, you didn't see it either, right? Yeah, because no one did.
Right. So, no, I read it off a piece of paper.
And then they played Michigan Tech in the finals, and we kind of talked about this in prep a little bit. This game was a perfect summation of the entire first half of the season, where Michigan gets out to a 2-1 lead late second, and then, or even through the second, and give up a goal early in the third, and then another one in the last few minutes to lose and get no points after being tied or winning for almost the entire game.
Right.
There was not much as way as special teams, and Michigan, I think, also, I have notes down here, it says that they had a lot more attempts on net too, and so they kind of quote-unquote won Corsi or whatever that means. But again, can't hold a lead.
Right. It's winning 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Not 60.
Maybe if they shorten hockey games, Michigan would get more points.
No, yeah, if they ended after the second period.
Oh my gosh. I don't even want to think about that.
Big Ten champs.
Yeah. So that came and went, and then they had the juniors and all that, and did you watch any of the juniors? This is more Anthony's thing, yeah.
This is Anthony, yeah, exactly.
I don't know, he's in Vegas somewhere chasing after some, maybe he's actually in the costume of the night. I mean, you've seen the Vegas pregame stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
Where the guy that's in the medal, and that would be cool if they gave him that job.
I bet that is what he's
now,
doing.
I'm just picturing him like
all the
waving a sword.
All now are falling into place. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Exactly. This is why he won't return our phone calls.
he's actually going to change his number.
He's very busy.
So then Michigan comes back, starts the second half of the year, and they play Notre Dame. And I was kind of like, all right, I'm going to try to get excited to watch this. The first half went, I don't want to say as poorly as it could have, but it did not go well.
No.
They had 4 points, something like that. They had more than that.
Well, I'm not exactly sure how many points, but they were in every game. Everything was close,
that's true.
But there was nothing that went their way, it seemed.
They
every one goal
they were
game
in last
ended up
place
going against them.
Yes.
Right, exactly.
They're in last place.
And a lot of blown leads, like you mentioned.
But so, you know, when Bailey was on in the last HockeyCast, she was talking about how when the season started, she thought Notre Dame was overrated, and they mm-hmm. came out and Notre Dame was amazing. And then in November, they kind of hit some skids and yeah. went into a tailspin. And I remember her being on the hockey cast saying that, you know, oh, I'm finally proven right about Notre Dame. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. So I kind of remember that watching this game. And she was kind of right, mm-hmm. and or right in general. The notes that I had was I thought the man made a few great saves, but in general, I thought the defense was really good, especially in game one. And then Michigan kind of got some timely goals, which I think is, you know, we sort of talked about this even during their first half stretches, where that's what they need. It's kind of like a baseball team that has really good pitching and solid defense, but a bunch of like 220 hitters. Mm-hmm. But if they get hits at the right times and somebody, you know, hits a 3-run home run in the seventh inning, like they're probably going to have a good chance to win.
Yeah, I thought Michigan skated really well in this series. And yeah. I think for me, this is the series where the first line sort of started to separate itself, just in terms of what they were able to create in the offensive zone.
Well, and they finally put Beecher up
exactly.
with Lockwood.
It's a line that I really, really like, Beecher, Lockwood, and Granowitz, and they seem to gel together nicely. And you've got guys that can pull the defense in different directions and create that space mm-hmm. for their line mates. Mm-hmm. And with guys that can pass, you know, that's gold. That's found gold right there, to have yeah. a line like that, because we already knew that they had lines 2, 3, and 4 that were relatively homogenous. They were going to play pretty well, and every once in a while they'd contribute when they could. But to have that line, I'm not saying this isn't like a CCM line, but but just, you know, they have a true top line now, I think, and then you feel comfortable rolling out those other forward lines.
Yeah,
and I think we saw through the Notre Dame series, then onto the Penn State series, that it started to make a difference in terms of what they were able to generate at even strength.
Well, Brian mentioned that he thought Lockwood looked good, at least in that series.
Really good in that series.
Yeah.
Well, ever since the Notre Dame series, through the Penn State series as well.
Right. But then you added Beecher, who, you yeah. know, this is kind of a spoiler alert, what I was going to bring up when we were talking a little bit about Penn State. Mm-hmm. But, like, he's coming along as sort of a true freshman
yeah.
and hitting sort of that second half stride, or it seems so that he has so far. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what they needed. It's a little bit what we talked about at the beginning of the season that they needed to have happen early. It didn't, and I think that you saw, while they didn't have a guy to do that sort of thing, is sort of be the goal scorer or mm-hmm. be the driver of play or be the best skater on the ice. And he's starting to come into that a little bit anyway, and you're starting to see some results. Also, I thought that Michigan played really well on special teams.
Yes.
All weekend, but in game one, they got a power play goal early. I think it set the tone. Notre Dame, for whatever reason, had a few, I think they had 3 power plays, but just wouldn't shoot the puck. Did you see any of this where, like, it seemed like they would pass the puck around from side to side and go up to the point and across and around and across? And Michigan, I think, was very disciplined in terms of staying in their shooting lanes, but Notre Dame would not shoot. Yeah. And I was just like waiting, and I'm like, okay, oh, here it comes. Oh, no, no, here. Oh, oh, there's no. And I'm like, I'm looking at the clock, and like 40 seconds go by, and I'm like, did they have an attempt? Like, right. I don't even see this. Mm-hmm. And I don't really get that. I didn't really see at some point you just have to try to score a goal, right?
You do. I don't understand why that's the tactic either. Unless, you know, Michigan's penalty kill has been, I guess, more aggressive this season. So
it's definitely gotten better.
If the idea is to make them have to then play disciplined and stay in their lanes, maybe it's you know,
yeah,
attacking the reverse. But, I mean, they did a nice job holding their own against that power play. So
yeah, and then
for them.
And then in the second game, like a minute or two into the mm-hmm. game, they get like the worst bounce ever, and man sees one of those Billy Sauer changeups that just yeah. kind of like hits something, and all time stands still as the puck just kind of goes up and over his shoulder and drops down into the net, and you're just kind of like, okay, well, if you're going to get that goal, we're in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
And then
yeah.
they didn't score again.
Right.
And Michigan bounced back, tied the game, I believe, power play goal, and then Summers had probably one of the best plays I've ever seen him make, and just kind of taking the puck to the net, kind of veering off through the slot, and then like, I don't know if he's being taken down, but he's like falling and flips like a backhand up into the corner. And you're like, what? What just happened? Like,
it's the stuff that didn't happen in the first half of the year.
Yeah.
Right? It's the kind of slightly lucky, but also some skill there.
Making a play. Like, now we're Mike Valenti.
That actually is going in. Yeah.
Yeah. So they take a 2-1 lead, and you're like, holy crap, like now we're in this game with a chance for a sweep.
Right.
They hold on, play good defense again, get an empty net goal, and win the weekend 6-1 in goal differential, and you're just like, whoa, all right. And then, okay. Like, and the other thing is, like, they finished the game. I mean, we've kind of said this already, but I think it's worth mentioning after all the stuff that we talked about in the first half is, you know, Michigan would play really well for 40 minutes or for 30 minutes or 50 minutes or whatever it is, and then kind of zone out or break down or just maybe the lights would get too bright. I'm not really sure, but they finished all these games off really well and ended up tacking on empty netters at the end to, you know, slam dunk the points that they needed. And all of a sudden you're like, all right, we're going into Happy Valley, and that's not where you want to go, at least this year. And, but, you know, they have a chance anyway, right?
Yeah, and as we talked about earlier in the year, they never really broke down defensively, you know, even in the first half. Yeah. It wasn't due to gross negligence or anything that they were getting scored on. It was bad bounces. It was stuff that went off skates and put guys in the wrong position. And so now you're seeing what you would hope to see, which is, you know, when the unlucky stuff happens, you figure it's got to even out at some point, and we're seeing that evening,
like,
I think.
When you start to actually make three-pointers?
Yes.
Okay. So
this has been Adam's Basketball Podcast.
Hey, you and Ace can just switch.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So, and then they go to Hockey Valley, as we talked about, and just, I watched the first game, and they just kind of came out firing. They controlled play early and were literally just on fire, getting the puck deep, getting the puck on net, keeping basically man with very little to do, which is very, like, Penn State. Like, they just, you know, I tweeted out after the game that they Penn Stated Penn State. Right. And I thought that also played true throughout the rest of the game. They didn't, like, super overwhelm them in course. I think they had them by about 10 attempts or so. But they ended up also getting a power play goal again for, what, the second or third game in a row, mm-hmm. and kept the powerful Penn State power play, which I think is like top five in the country.
Yeah, it is.
Up around 30%.
It was around, yeah. And it's about 28 now.
They only gave him two chances.
Right.
And they didn't score on him, which, like, that is one of the keys when you play Penn State.
Oh,
is
yeah.
You cannot give them power play chances,
right,
or else you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't give those chances up, and then when Penn State did get on a power play, I thought Michigan played really well, and it wasn't like Penn State was hitting posts or man was playing out of his mind. They did a really good job of keeping Penn State's like great chances to a minimum, if at all,
yeah,
which is just piggybacking on, like, what we were talking about in the Notre Dame series,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, that's just kind of a key for this team, because although in this game they did kind of blow up and score six goals and they ended up winning 6-0, you know, that's really been an outlier for the most part for this team,
right,
in terms of, like, a bunch of goal scoring. And in order for them to continue to be successful, they're going to have to win special teams or at least play the other team dead even, which is not something that they've done all year. And now you're starting to see that a little more.
Exactly. Obviously, a key for the next 10 games is continuing to be as sound defensively as they have been. And you know that there's going to be poorly timed penalties in there somewhere. And so now you have a penalty kill unit, rather, that you can trust. And on the last hockey cast, you guys were talking about, you know, a couple years ago, was it 2 years ago, when you were just holding on for dear life, hoping against hope that nothing happened, that they didn't get called for anything. But now you have a top 15 penalty kill. So that's, I think, something to build off of going forward. And the power play, I think they've got two good units. Obviously, the first has a ton of skill on it. The second, though, seems pretty serviceable, I think. They at least move the ball
getting,
and they get themselves into good positions.
It's getting better, I think.
Yeah, I thought the Penn State series, it looked a lot better.
Yeah. So, game one, like I said, they get five even strength goals, mm-hmm. end up winning 6-0. That was, I think, also the game that Lockwood had that rip from Peyton Jones where he comes off the bench and it's reviewed and they take it away, but
yes.
he skates in, steals the puck from Jones, who comes out of the net and skates around, beats him with a wraparound, and they wave it off. But that's the kind of stuff also that we haven't really seen from Lockwood. Not necessarily like ripping the puck from a goalie, but a great individual one-on-one play to score a goal, which is something that this team has not really had. You've seen a little bit from Beecher here or there, but this is what Lockwood had last year that kind of kept him sort of in it as much as they could be in it down the stretch. And, you know, it'd be great, you know, if he can continue that, you know, to add that to even strength, like I said, pairing him with Beecher, now you, like you were talking about, now you have a real, like, mm-hmm. number one line.
Yeah, I think it's hard to understate the importance of what him becoming a scoring threat means for this team's future.
Yeah, I agree.
Because, you know, he's a great setup man, and we saw that, or we have seen that at least in the second half of the year, but now it seems like he's taken an additional step forward. And as Bailey mentioned on the last hockey cast, he seemed to be putting sort of the weight of the world and all the pressures of what this team was facing on himself early in the year.
Yeah.
This looks like the Will Lockwood, the last four games, that I expected to see as a senior captain.
Just playing within himself.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And playing within himself, obviously, that sets that whole first line up for success.
Exactly.
That's all he needs to do.
Yep. Yep. No, I agree. Game two, I didn't see live. I watched a replay, mm-hmm. but Penn State kind of, they took a ton of penalties at the end of game one, and you knew it was going to get probably pretty chippy. I mean, we remember games back in the CCHA days where Michigan would run a team out of the building on Friday, and the other team would come out fighting in the third period, and then the next day it would be very scrappy. And that's kind of what Penn State did in this situation. Michigan took the bait a little bit, took some penalties, and Penn State finally converted. I think it was on a 5-on-3. So they didn't even score on like a regular power play. It took a two-man advantage. But Michigan was down in, I believe, a 2-0 hole, clawed their way back, got it, then tied it again at 3-3.
Exactly. Right.
Even took a lead, mm-hmm. and then ended up, you know, as in true first half fashion, blew the lead, gave up a goal, and you're kind of thinking, well, you know, here we go again. But they make it through overtime, and Van Wy scores in the second overtime on a, I mean, I don't know, I guess it's always breakaways in 3-on-3 hockey, but to steal a 2-1, I guess, kind of a steal. Like, they probably shouldn't have had points, but then they probably should have had the points. Yeah. Like, it was a very roller coastery. Like, if you have those, like, percentage to win charts, you know, like in football or basketball, where they have, like, the graph, and this is probably one of those, like, up and down ones,
definitely.
Especially in the second half of the game.
Definitely.
But the thing that says to me, and I touched a little bit on this on the MGO podcast on Sunday, was that, like, you know, and I'm trying not to get too intangible, I guess, but, like, that sort of never say die and winning mentality that they don't consider themselves out of games, and they fought back. First of all, they close games, which you kind of need that to close games against Notre Dame, and then obviously they finished off Penn State in the first game, but then to fight back down 2-0 in a tough place to play, fight back down 3-2 once you get back, and then to take the lead, and then to give up a goal, and then to still be able to overcome that to get, you know, at least 2 points mm-hmm. of the three is something that I think, you know, if you add that to this team, or they can kind of stay there and build on that confidence, like, there's no reason to think that they can't outskate teams and then not collapse at the end of this year, which is obviously what they're going to need to do to make the tournament. But that's just sort of a what obviously needed to happen. And we're kind of seeing it, which is a really cool thing.
Yeah, because I think at some point you wonder if a team is telling itself that they can't ever give up, and then they're telling the media, like, you just got to play 60 minutes and we don't quit. And we see that they don't quit, but then they never get results. You wonder at what point do they start to quit a little bit, but now they've got the results. So it's just, it reinforces that. Now you know that they're going to continue to go for that full 60 without easing off.
Well, it's so cliche and I kind of hate that stuff, but in this case, I really think that fits because you looked at the game and you saw, right, you know, it's not that they can't skate with this team. It's not that they can't even defend or even score enough goals sometimes. It's just like you see these little switches sometimes where you just make a really bad mistake at the really wrong time, and now all of a sudden you're losing a game that you probably played at least 50-50, if not, you know, 60-40, 70-30 mm-hmm. throughout most of the game, and you're getting no points from it.
Yeah.
Like we were talking about, and I think I mentioned this on Sunday too, you know, I was looking at their four times that happened in the first half of the season. And if you flip two of them, going into, I forget which series it was, maybe it was Penn State, they would have been in second place.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is like, whoa, because, you know, you add 3 points to Michigan for that, take away three from whoever it was. And I don't think it really mattered which two.
Yeah.
You could have picked any of them. And one of them, they had like a 2-goal lead in the third period, which is like, that needs to be safe. Mm-hmm. And then they had 3-2-1 leads late in the game in three other games. You think, oh gosh, you know, they can hold on to one of them. Well, so they're right there, and now we're starting to see, okay, maybe they've kind of climbed that last mountain, or hopefully.
Yeah, you just don't want a team that's in its own head, right?
Yeah.
And at some point, you're fighting human nature if you're putting your everything into something and you're not getting the result that you want out of it. But now, getting the results. And so the good thing is those conference standings, and we'll get to this later,
yeah,
are still pretty bunched up, which means you can leapfrog some teams with some sweeps here.
Yeah, especially this weekend, which we will preview in a minute.
Yep.
The other thing I wrote down is that I thought that some of the guys that were scoring was kind of a big deal. Hayhurst got one, I think, to tie it.
Yeah.
Granowitz has had two. Now, a couple of those, I guess he's had three in the last couple of weeks, but a couple of those are like pretty dirty goals where
Definitely the net front presence on that front line, but he's getting himself in the right position to be there to clean up.
I think Bailey tweeted out after his second goal when he scored off his stick. He was like, hey, he can score with his stick, because I think he scored like off his chest and off his knee another time. So then Nolan Moyle got a goal too, which, mm-hmm. you know, he had, if you remember last year when Michigan kind of started to turn around a little bit in the second half, he started scoring a few more goals mm-hmm. on that Van Wy, Raby, Moyle line. And Van Wy has always kind of been sort of the creator or the net driver, and Moyle's been a little bit more of the shooter in those situations. And so if he can put a couple pucks in the net, now you're starting to get like contributions from third and fourth line, and you know, we saw that last weekend. The last thing that I had written down for this is, can you score a goal if one of your players is already in the net? Because did you see that?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I did. You know,
I mean, apparently you can.
They had the whole Brett Hull thing, you remember, back in 99 mm-hmm. when he had his foot in the crease. They reversed that rule. So now you can, as long as you're not like affecting anyone.
Exactly. Right.
And this guy, the guy in the net, I don't remember who it was, but he gets into the net somehow. The net stays on its moorings.
Yeah.
Somehow he does not hit man or anyone else.
Right.
Is kind of like tucked into the corner, in the bottom corner. And then the guy shoots from a different angle after man, I think, maybe gets a little sloppy and slides a little too far out of the crease. But the guy picks the opposite upper corner. So, like, I don't know. Like, if you know a ton about soccer offsides, but like if you're technically offside in soccer, but you're completely out of the play and you're not affecting anyone and the ball isn't there, like they'll just be like, well, it's irrelevant. But if you're obviously in the play or you're near the goalie or you're obstructing anything, then you're offside. But that's what it seemed like in this situation where, okay, he's in the net, but he didn't hit the goalie. He wasn't really obstructing anyone else. He didn't hit the puck. The puck was going to go in the net regardless. So I don't know what the rule is offhand, and I guess I could have looked it up. I did not look it up. I guess. So,
well, I think, so he got pushed.
Yeah.
If I recall correctly, but not hard enough that, like you said, that it knocked it off its moorings.
Right.
So now we're in this weird gray area.
Because it wasn't a penalty.
Right, it wasn't a penalty.
But
the net's,
he was
not
in
off,
the net.
So it's not going to stop play, so...
So it seems like unless there's a rule that says you cannot if you're in the net, mm-hmm. which I could see there being a rule like that, because there used to be the skate in the crease rule.
Right.
But if not, I wasn't like mad that it counted, because I was like, he in the spirit of the game, he wasn't like obstructing anything. He just was in the net.
Yeah.
So like, okay, if he broke a rule, then it shouldn't have counted, which I could see there being that rule. But if you're playing in the backyard and you're screwing around, like, and there's no rules and you're just playing whatever sport, like, it counts because, like, it didn't change the outcome of anything.
Yeah.
So,
and it's tough because he doesn't hit the goalie.
That's kind of my opinion on that. You could go one way or another, but whatever.
Sure. Couple things before we move on.
Yes.
I feel like just as far as the offense is concerned, personally, my observation mm-hmm. is that lines 2 through 4, when they won battles on the boards, did an excellent job breaking the puck out.
Ah.
And that really drove a lot of play for them. And
You mean their own end?
Yeah.
Winning battles on the boards on their defensive
end. Correct. Led to
getting the puck to defensemen.
Some offense.
Starting to break out. Yeah, okay.
Exactly. And so one thing we talked about the last time I did the hockey cast, this would be, I guess, like 2 hockey casts ago, was how it seemed like they were playing a lot of dump and chase. Mm-hmm. And I don't really see that anymore. I see a lot of guys breaking the puck out and then moving around the offensive zone until they find the pass they want, or taking higher quality shots. And so I think a lot has stayed the same from the first to the second half, but I think offensively they're starting to kind of find their groove as far as generating better chances. But as we can see from the Corsi numbers, we're still seeing some very positive results as far as that's concerned, in terms of out attempting teams. So I think that's another thing that will only benefit them over these next 10 games.
Well, and you know, Anthony has a little more insight into this. So we got to go to Vegas, I guess, to find out. But
Well, you said expenses aren't checked. So.
That's true. Yeah, we could start buying flights. $10,000 for... Anyway. So
it was for a podcast.
That's right. Write it off on our taxes. So I think, though, that... You know, I think Anthony says that it depends on your personnel what is better, dumping and chasing or carrying the zone.
Right.
I guess my thought of it would be if you can carry the zone, it's always generally a little bit better because you don't really stand to lose the puck because you have it. And then you're carrying in with momentum instead of digging and fighting. I suppose if you have the right guys, maybe it's better to get a post up and throw it in front. But yeah, I would say that anytime you can carry the zone, you're probably going to be better off in terms of, like, will you get an attempt on net or can you create a high danger chance on that particular rush because you still have the puck, especially if other guys are coming with you.
That's always been my thought. I completely agree.
Yeah.
But I'm not into mascot fighting. That is the express territory of NCAA football, the video game.
Oh, man.
And so I'm just going to leave that there because I'm not taking on a Golden Knight. But I agree with you. Just don't tell Anthony.
Well, if you're going to leave that there, then maybe we'll leave everyone here and we'll slowly turn and try to get out of this segment alive and take a break. And then we'll come back and look at the Ohio State series, which is coming up, which is going to be huge.
Yes.
And then maybe what the rest of the year looks like and where Michigan's at in different rating systems.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
So Michigan's next series is coming up this weekend. This will probably post on a Thursday. It is currently Wednesday evening, and their series is Friday and Saturday. And of course, the biggest series of the year would be Ohio State. They are not quite as good as they are in football, but they have all been kind of Michigan's nemesis at least the past couple of years. I think Michigan got a game or two off them last year, but for the last few years, this series also has tilted the way of Columbus. And earlier this year, that was the same way. If Michigan is going to continue this run, it really needs to flip back towards the Wolverines this weekend.
That is absolutely right, David. And we should probably talk about the last time these two teams
played. Yeah, we'll touch on that. And then we'll go into some of our eight factors or whatever
exactly.
We call it. So,
right.
So last time, I remember, like, so the first game, I had to listen to this one on the radio, but they were up somehow 2-0. I think they were being like outchanced and out attempted and out everything.
Right.
But were somehow up 2-0 about halfway through the game, and you know it seemed like this wasn't going to last because it's like one of those like last stand situations where somehow you look up at the scoreboard and you're winning, but it feels like you're losing by like 8.
Mm-hmm.
And
the ice is tilted.
Yeah. And eventually that came back to get them. Ohio State was a little better on Corsi. They won the game on special teams. Even though Michigan did get a power play goal, Ohio State did get 2 of 3 on when they had power plays. And it was kind of like, this was very indicative of those like first season collapses where,
yeah.
Again, they weren't outplaying Ohio State per se, but they had a lead and it was late enough. And Ohio State didn't necessarily have like the overwhelming scoring that say a Penn State does. But you kind of hope that you could hold a 2-goal lead. I know it's on the road, but still, that's one you kind of at least need to get something out of.
Yeah,
they didn't. The next night, they actually I thought sort of maybe played better. I think, at least for the first half of the game, didn't get a goal, but like I thought they looked better on the ice. I completely agree with that.
They did.
They created more offense.
Yep.
They controlled the puck a little more. Then they gave up a power play goal, I think, late, and were scrambling to try to tie it. And Cam York made probably one of his best plays of the year until a little bit later, where he came in down the left side from the left point and beat Napier to the right, around, like on a wraparound to the right post.
Yes.
and tied the game. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of like, you're like, they hadn't scored in like three periods, and you're just like, okay, this is what's gonna, you know, I've seen this before, they can't score, and he just kind of has a wonder goal out of nowhere to tie the game. And all of a sudden you go from being feeling like you're down a ton of goals to like, oh wait, we have tied the game, we're kind of outplaying them, just couldn't get a goal, and now we're like one nice bounce away from getting a split.
Yeah, so we had talked a lot about how they just weren't getting the right bounces in the first half of
the year.
But that was, I think, the first time that comes to mind, at least, of someone just going out and creating something on their own.
Yeah.
Like, there aren't a lot of guys on the roster that necessarily are that type of...
Like a takeover.
...talent where they can just go and do that. But that's what he did. He took over.
You're right.
And it, obviously, the key moment, too.
Yeah.
And so that's, night two felt like a totally different team, I think, than the one that came out, even though they had that two goal lead that you're just kind of expecting to disappear on night one.
Yeah, especially because they weren't playing that well.
Yeah, exactly.
But, and then, you know, I remember this one, it was just kind of like, it put the bow on the whole series, but I think it was Summers took a bad shot from the point. Like, well, at MGoBlog, we kind of called him Michael Downing, and he takes a shot, and it hits the defender that's like 4 feet in front of him, right. And the puck ricochets out behind him, and all of a sudden you have a 2-on-1 the other way, and they score on it with like a minute to go, and you're just like, you know, outplayed him for, or played him even to outplay them for the entire game, can't get a goal, finally tie it up, and then you give up kind of like, just like one of those goals that, you know, those happen. I'm not going to like hate on a guy for it, but it was just like worst timing possible that you could really have that happening. And so then now you had a 2-goal lead in one game, and you outplay him in the second game, and you still come home with 0 points, and you're just, you know, how does this stuff happen? You know, like, it's just, they weren't great, but it also seemed like they kind of got the raw end of some stuff too.
No one can see this but David, but I'm nodding vigorously because I'd blocked that goal out of memory. Now you've mentioned that, and I can see the replay in my mind. So
maybe this is why Anthony went to Vegas.
You're right. That was very unfortunate.
Yeah.
Oh boy, now I have a headache.
But the beautiful thing about that, if there is a silver lining, I guess, is that those were winnable games.
Yes.
I think both of them.
Yes. I would agree with that.
They made some costly mistakes, which they haven't made lately, and they had both games sort of in grasp or within a chance to win it.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen sort of similar games like that the past couple weeks that, hey, if you replay what you've done the past couple weeks and don't make a silly mistake at the end or can hold a lead like that, I mean, they can get points, I think, a lot of points in the series.
I completely agree. And I think we'll see when we get to the eight-factor thing in a second here that's a pretty quality team. So,
yeah,
you know, Michigan's matching up well against quality opponents, and there's no reason to believe that there's a team in this next 10-game stretch that's just going to outplay them completely.
No,
I think they can hang with everybody on the schedule.
Honestly, the one team that scared me the most throughout the course of the year, which I was quickly proven wrong, was Penn State. And they came to Yost, and Michigan outplayed them for the first game. And then the second game, I believe I wrote that I thought that was Michigan's best game of the year, even though they only scored one goal. But I thought they outplayed them again, just didn't, couldn't get a goal, even though they had great chances and they limited Penn State to the best that you really could. And then we saw last week or 2 weekends ago when they went to Hockey Valley that, you know, they blitzed them in the first game, and the second game they fought back. And so, if they're going to do that against Penn State, you know, Wisconsin has some number one picks, so they have some talent on that team, but their results have not been there either.
Not even close.
And, you know, their back end is a little soft, too, in terms of, like, goaltending, and their defense can get leaky at times. And you know, if you want to play a game as to, like, okay, who can have a better goalie in defense, like Michigan's probably going to be there, right, with most teams, if not better than you.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I mean, Penn State is sixth in pairwise right now.
Right.
And Michigan outplayed them pretty consistently over four games. So.
And so in pairwise is a great segue into what we're going to talk about here. So Ohio State, the first thing I always look at is where you are you in pairwise?
Right.
And they are 10th, which is good. It's not great. It's in the tournament. But I think I don't like we kept saying, this isn't a team that Michigan can't skate with.
Right.
And if you're 10th in pairwise and Michigan can skate with you, you're probably not a whole lot worse than that.
Right,
And they are 24th, but that's, again, some blown leads, first half stuff. But Ohio State's done a good job getting to where they've been. it's kind of what they've been the last couple of years. Just right, like, solidly in the tournament, but not necessarily like a top number one seed.
Yeah.
Then we look at Corsi, and they're 24th in the country, which is, I think, even lower than Michigan. I think Michigan's like 21st.
Yeah.
But they're about the same.
They're close.
So you look at there. So you look at that, and you say, okay, well, you know, both teams probably going to have some of the puck. It's not going to go necessarily decidedly in one way or the other.
Right. On a normal night, they outshoot, or out attempt rather, their opponent.
Yeah, slightly.
Yeah.
And then we look at special teams. So Ohio State's power play, 25.7, which we remember from the first half was good. You can't give them a lot of chances. That was also true 2 years ago, where they just, that's how they would win games, is that they would play you dead even on even strength. They wouldn't give up any crap. And then they'd kill you when you gave them an advantage, which is, you know, it's not a bad way to play hockey. Like, obviously you want to beat somebody 5-on-5, but if you can crush someone when they make a mistake and give you an advantage, like, that seems like it's very smart and intelligent and well put together.
Yeah, it works.
Their penalty kill is still also good, not exceptional, but it's still good. It's, you know, at 82.5% or so. So pretty good. I think, where does that rank? Have you,
I can pull that up.
Did you look at where that was?
I did. I don't, let's see.
I mean, they've always been, like I said, been pretty good on special teams.
Top 10 unit or anything like that.
No, I mean, I remember 2 years ago when they had, like, they're over 90%.
Yeah, that puts them at 23rd.
Okay, so they're so better, like, than average, yeah, but not great. Like, yeah,
almost in the upper third, but not even.
And then we look at sort of who do they have individual players that are scoring a lot of goals. They have, or getting a lot of points. They have three.
Yeah.
Guys, Lisinski, who feels like he's been there forever. Westland, which I believe he signed an NLI to come to Michigan.
Yeah, I think so.
And somehow did not end up here.
Yeah, right.
Which is a little frustrating. So they have three guys that are scoring over 0.75 points per game, which is good. Yeah. It's not exceptional.
No, it's about average.
But it's fine. They have five skaters who've been drafted, which, again, that's good, not exceptional. Like, it's not Minnesota, it's not even Michigan, actually.
Yeah, which it's actually not,
which
a lot
is
of high-end talent.
No, but which tells you it's a lot of their organization and the way that they play. And then their goaltending is obviously very good. Napier has a 0.927 save percentage,
right,
which is about what Mann's is. I think Mann might be a little higher. And GAA is, his is 206, which is
really good.
Which is very good. I think Mann's below that, but Mann is, I mean, he's as good as anyone I've probably seen in the last couple of years. I remember Cale Morris was very good a couple years ago for Notre Dame. He's kind of tapered off. And Sean Romeo, who played for Ohio State before Napier, and I think they split it last year, was also very good. But
just in terms of what he can do, I mean, he can single-handedly keep you in a game.
Like,
game two against Penn State.
Yeah,
there was, I forget how exactly the puck got there, whether it hit a skate or a skater,
uh-huh,
but there was a guy who had a completely open rip from the slot, and Mann stonewalled him.
Yeah.
And the guy immediately surrendered Cobra'd. That's how good of a chance it was. I mean, you don't usually see that, but, like, on ice, he did that.
Yeah.
So that's Mann. That's stuff, like,
no, he's
that since, I don't know.
And that's where I think when you look at these numbers, Michigan matches up decently well. They have as many drafted skaters. They don't have individual guys that score, because, unfortunately, no one on this team is having a great scoring year in terms of goals or assists. They've a couple guys have come on a little bit more lately, but, you know, when you're looking at numbers over the course of the year, I don't even think Michigan has one that's over 0.75 points per game. The last time I looked, I do not think one person was there. They do probably have... They match up well in net. They probably match up well, decently well in special teams. Their power play unit is probably not quite what Ohio State's is, but I would say that in more recently, it's been a lot better. And so if you take into consideration what it is now in terms of over the entire year, it probably is not too far off. So it probably looks like a pretty 50-50 series.
Yeah.
Michigan, like as we touched on earlier, played well against them earlier, just couldn't finish a game. That seems to be something that they've done better lately. So it being home ice, the team seems a little more invigorated. They seem fired up in terms of, like, having sort of a renewed second half, which is something we have seen under Mel, especially in that first year, and even a little bit last year. And had they fixed the power play last year at all, Like, they probably get a couple sweeps when they end up splitting. So this isn't unprecedented from a Michigan team. It's they don't seem to have that high-end goal-scoring talent that they had 2 years ago. And I guess Norris got hurt in the second half of last year, and Hughes was a bit up and down. But so it's going to take very concerted effort from like multiple lines, and you're going to have to be very solid in the back end and not give things away and break down. But the way that they've been playing, I think, you know, this is definitely a series that they can get more than 3 points. I'm not going to guarantee it, because you could see a split here very easily. They probably need more than 3 points, especially if they're going to try to catch Ohio State. Like, if they get six, like, I think third place in the conference, maybe second, depending on then what they do in a couple weeks against State. But third place is probably in play if they can get a sweep this weekend. If not, they're going to need some help from someone else beating Ohio State.
Yeah, I think I could see a split. It would be unfortunate. 6 points, I mean, now yeah. You're talking.
Yeah.
And
they were the 50 seconds.
A little bit, but.
From it
really,
last weekend.
I think they can hang with them for sure. I don't think we need to question that necessarily, but they did take their foot off the gas against the U.S. National Team Development Program last weekend.
Yeah.
It's an exhibition, so you just have to hope that they know to press down again. I mean, they said as much after the game that they didn't have a good week of practice going into that. They sort of let off. So you got to figure, like, they know what's at stake here, so they just have to get it going again. I almost wish that exhibition was just at the front end of the year so you can continue.
It used to be.
Continue playing as they had been in the Big Ten part of the schedule.
We haven't really touched on that. And, you know, Brian talked a lot more about it on Sunday because he went to it. I did not go. But to me, like, I looked at the line charts and they played a number of walk-ons, a number of minutes. I've heard that, you know, their high-end guys didn't play a ton. They kind of split in net. And it's one of those games that, like, there's not a lot of upside at this time of year, like you were saying. Like, you play, like, that's a good game to schedule to start the year.
Yeah.
Or maybe after your first series, if you want to, you know, work on a couple things before you get, you know, into your prime non-conference series or before conference series starts. But having it when they did, Mel mentioned something about how he didn't want to take away from momentum or whatever. And I hope that, like, you can approach this and say, okay, look, this has nothing to do with everything else that we've been doing. This is a completely different team with different types of players that are needing to prove different things than we are right now. So, look, play the game, don't get hurt, keep, you know, some continuity going, maybe play some guys that, you know, could use a little more confidence in playing, you know, play a couple different guys in the power play or try something out. But, you know, I think it was 2-0 late and ended up being 4-1. I don't read a ton into that. It's just kind of what it is, especially, like I said, when you look at a lot of who played.
Yeah, and I think win-loss, that doesn't really matter so much.
Yeah.
It's more about how they come out and take this week of practice leading into this series.
So we touched a little bit on the standings. We'll run them down for you a little bit. Michigan State and Penn State are tied at first with 28 points. Ohio State is second with 26. So the top three are pretty tight. I think it's going to be tough for Michigan to catch Penn State because they don't play them. So
exactly.
They're going to have to go in the tank, something they haven't really done at all this year. Michigan State, I think it will also be tough for Michigan to catch them. The difference is that they do have two games against them, one at LCA, one at Munn. Neither is obviously a guarantee. So you're going to probably need a sweep to catch them. Munn, Michigan doesn't generally play well there. They sometimes get a game, but it's not my favorite place when Michigan goes. Then we talked about Ohio State, and they are, I believe, 8 points ahead of Michigan. So getting that six puts you within a game of them, even less than.
Yeah.
Notre Dame has 23 points, Minnesota 22, Michigan 18, and Wisconsin 17. Notre Dame is only 5 points ahead, but has not been playing very well, like we talked about. Michigan also hosts them. So if it comes down, I think that's the last series of the season. If it comes down to, or their last home series, maybe
they go to Minnesota. Yeah.
If it comes down to, you know, where it's 50-50, Michigan could take a stranglehold of that spot with that series potentially. And then Minnesota, they finished the season against. Minnesota hasn't looked great in a few years. They still haven't looked great. I thought Michigan probably could have won, should have won at least one of the two games, and I don't think they got much from that series at Yost. I don't really know what to think of them. I mean, Anthony always talks about how young they are, and he's probably correct in that sense, but I didn't see a lot of individual talent. Minnesota hasn't put up the numbers that they have in the last few years. They have not done that since the Minnesota that we grew up watching. And they're they don't seem to be a whole lot different this year. So those are, I think that's a team Michigan can definitely pass. And then Wisconsin's in last, and actually Michigan has two games on them. So they should be able to finish ahead of Wisconsin. Well. Yeah. I think that they should be able to finish ahead of Minnesota, especially if they do well in Minneapolis. And then, you know, I think Notre Dame is definitely catchable. The other three teams are, well, it really comes down to what Michigan does this weekend. If they can get two games against Ohio State, which is not off the table by any means. I think that if that happens, I will not be shocked. I will be excited and thankful. I don't know that I'll be shocked, though.
Well, I mean, there's a lot to be optimistic about, right?
Right.
There's no team left on this schedule that they can't sweep. I'm not saying they're going to sweep everybody.
Right.
They're not going to, you know, necessarily do that to Michigan State. That does seem rough, having to go two.
That one seems probably the most difficult.
That series is broken up. It's a Friday night and a Monday. It's like, yeah, I don't know.
Monday,
playing at LCA is kind of different. That's,
I don't know.
I think they could do okay there. But you look at Ohio State.
Yep. We talked about that.
Yep. Wisconsin, Notre Dame, Minnesota. It also sets up nicely from a home road perspective.
Yeah.
Because you've got at Minnesota and then the one game at Michigan State. And other than that, they're at Yost.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, if they do well this weekend, they host Wisconsin next weekend, which I think that they are at least as good, if not better, than Wisconsin next weekend. If they get a lot of points from these 2 weeks, they go into that Michigan State series. That could be a huge series, and you know, you could get a lot of Michigan fans a potential. Now, again, it's on a Monday night in Detroit, which is like, man, maybe people will go. I hope you do. You should go.
It's another schedule change, right? That used to be a Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to that game so many times.
Me too.
And yeah. Now on Monday night, I don't get that. But
as we're going to talk about in a second, 10 games left.
Yeah.
Really.
Well, let's talk about it.
They need to win 7 to get into a good position in terms of pairwise to probably make the tournament, or at least have a good shot of making the tournament, barring what happens in the Big Ten tournament.
Right.
But you have 6 games at Yost and 1 neutral site game.
Correct. Which they've generally done well in Detroit.
Yeah,
when they've
exactly.
had it, as long as they haven't had a terrible team,
right?
But
right.
Like they've played well in Detroit against Michigan State.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's generally a Michigan-friendly crowd.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, so you need to win about 7. Brian has talked on the site and I think on the podcast before about Jim Dahl's College Hockey Ranked website,
right.
That runs a bunch of simulations to see where teams might end up. There's a huge swing depending on whether they win 8 or 6 games in terms of where they could end up. In pairwise, if they win 6, they're most likely going to sit right around where they are,
which is
upper 20s.
Pretty far out of the tournament.
If they win 8, now you're looking at being around 13th or 14th.
And that's not including the conference tournament.
Exactly. And that's before the conference tournament. So then 13th or 14th is right about where you want to be going into that.
Yeah.
So they need to win the home games, the neutral site game, take something on the road, you know.
Yeah.
Either way
you break it down,
error,
you're going to have to win.
But there's also, you know, reason to believe they can hang with everybody.
Right.
So it's not a worst case scenario thing. Like this isn't impossible. It's just they dug themselves a pretty big hole in the first half that they at least still have a chance to recover from.
So I would say that the ceiling probably in the standings is probably 3rd if things go pretty well. 4th, I think 4th would be big because it would get that first round series at Yost,
sure,
which you always would prefer to have. And right. Michigan beat Wisconsin 2 years ago at Yost. Mm-hmm. They lost last year in Madison. I don't remember the last time Michigan lost a 2-game series at Yost. I don't know. I mean, I've been following the team since 2-game series, not just at Yost, but I mean a playoff series.
Sure,
like going back to the CCHA.
Yeah.
Like I've been following Michigan hockey since about 2003-ish when I started here in school, and I don't think that's happened since then. They've lost series before, but not at home. So if they can get that 4th seed, which is definitely in play, I think that gives them a pretty good chance to get into that semifinal game, which then you're probably facing a team that a win there gives you a pairwise jump. So, you know, it's going to take a lot, but the way that they've been playing, I think it's there. I think fourth place is definitely doable. Third is going to be a bit more of a stretch, but you know, I think it's at least probably still in play.
I think you're right.
We've touched on power pairwise. And then the last thing is, will rooting guides come back? I, for those of you who've been kind of following stuff that I've done, I try to write the game breakdowns. Adam always edits those. We did some rooting guides a couple of years ago when Michigan got hot to start the second half. And I was kind of look, because we're both kind of talking about, you know, what do we want to have happen this weekend? You know, obviously we want Michigan to win, but what helps them the most? Well, I was thinking about starting it last weekend, but Michigan didn't play. And then it's still, I felt like they still needed one more good weekend. So if Michigan performs well this weekend and it looks, and they can get in the top 20 in pairwise, even a little bit higher, then we can start really looking around at other teams nationally, and we can take a look at, okay, now we're getting down to it and Michigan is in it again to finish high enough up in the standings. So I'll take a look into that. If they, you know, crap out this weekend and things don't go as well, there's probably not as big a reason to start looking around. You just kind of got to win your own games. But yeah. I've missed them. They've been kind of fun, and it'd be fun to do them again. Hopefully the team is good enough that we can
right.
we can start doing that again.
Yeah, so sweep for more work.
Hey, you know, we all need money.
But that's good. Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to touch on at all?
No, I'm just happy to edit those, so they should go ahead and just do the sweep, is what I would say.
Okay. So, get our brooms out.
I don't mind.
Here's hoping.
Pictures and stuff. No big deal.
Well, thanks again for listening. This was kind of a catch-up. We haven't been able to do as quite as many this year. We'll do more, hopefully every couple weeks, as long as, you know, Michigan stays at least remotely relevant in hockey. And hopefully Anthony is doing well in Vegas. I don't know, put some chips on black for us, I guess? Is that what you do? I'm not very good at Vegas.
I'm not good at Vegasing either. I think people usually, when they go out there to perform, they do like residencies, so I'm not sure
okay.
how long his mascot gig is, but I assume that means he then comes back.
Oh yeah, I don't know.
Once that's done.
Well, unless they hire him full time.
Well, best of luck. Thank you for listening to Adam's Basketball Podcast. Something, something, San Francisco, millennials, don't shoot threes, take it to the hoop!